Welcome back to the CTO Playbook, the podcast dedicated to helping CTOs excel. Today, we're talking about a transition that I personally have never felt drawn to, moving from CTO to CEO. I love being close to technology, and my wife Janine thrives in the CEO role for our company. But many CTOs wonder, should they make the leap? That's why I'm thrilled to have Andre Luca with me today, who has made that exact transition. We'll be talking about his journey, the pitfalls, the challenges, the wins, and talking about his playbook for success. I'm your host, Adam Horner. As a coach for CTOs from startups to enterprises, I empower tech leaders to escape the cycle of lurching from crisis to crisis and build the skills to lead with confidence, clarity, and purpose. I provide practical, personalized coaching tailored to the challenges faced in your organization, helping each CTO shift from reactive problem solving to proactive strategic leadership. I help each CTO forge their own path for growth, allowing them to delegate confidently, align engineering with the business, and fully step into their role as a trusted, respected peer at the executive table. This podcast enables me to bring some awesome playbooks to you and the many CTOs that are looking to broaden their knowledge base. Between me and my guests, we cover valuable topics for executive tech leaders, providing insights, strategies, and practical advice to help you build and refine your own playbook so that you can excel as a CTO. I'm really excited for this conversation, Luca. Thank you very much for joining me. As somebody who has literally never been tempted to take the CEO role, I'm really, really curious to see what it was that made you make that transition. But before we get to that, I think it'd be really good to hear a little bit about your background and how you came up to this transition.
Sure. Well, thank you very much for inviting me to the podcast, Adam. Yes, my name is Andrea Luque. My background is computer science and machine learning. I got my master's back in Portugal, joined KPMG there. But after 3 years, I got really bored and just wanted to join startups. So I moved to London. This was around 12 years ago. Since then, I started hopping between startups and taking jobs from software engineering, head of data science, and then end up as CTO of two startups. And finally, well, the reason why I'm having this conversation is because actually I took the job of the CEO of one of them.
Awesome. So you actually had a significant transition in there first, in that you moved from Portugal to London. So what was the thinking behind that move? Because Portugal also has quite a good startup scene as well, I hear.
Yes, nowadays it has a good startup scene. Of course, not comparable to London or the UK. But at that time, this was around 12 years ago, it wasn't, no one knew what a startup was. This was kind of just out of 2008 economical crisis in Portugal. So it wasn't pretty there. And I also had a big dream of living in the UK and finding more about UK culture. So just wanted to come here.
Oh, okay. So it was sort of a dream built into the movement there as well then.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what a great way to be able to live that dream as well. Cool. So yeah. Let's talk a little bit about some of those startups you worked in then. So what were the kinds of technologies you were working on as an engineer?
Sure. So because of my background in machine learning, I always wanted to be as close as possible to AI. At that point, AI wasn't that fancy. No one believed in it and actually was really boring.
So one of the so-called AI winters then, really.
Yes, exactly. And I started in a company called ShareAGift, a software engineer. The whole purpose of the company was to put money in a kitty. So that what it means is basically putting money in a pot, then you can buy a bigger gift for your colleague or coworker or your family. Then after that one, I just wanted to move as close as possible to machine learning, as I said. At that time, the closest thing was big data. So I moved to Warwick Analytics, started there as software engineer.
And how big was Warwick when you joined there?
I was the third employee there.
So you're very early in there.
Yes. Just one room, me, the CEO, and another guy, another software engineer. And the initial IP was around understanding the root cause behind the big kind of recalls of cars that was happening in the UK at that time, and creating a almost like a supercharged decision tree to understand the root cause and the patterns behind the sensors and the parts of the cars that created the kind of signature on those cars.
So you're collecting from all of those onboard sensors, feeding in back to the company's HQ, and then essentially analyzing that. Have I understood it correctly?
Yes, that's in a nutshell, that's what it was. We tried to approach many different manufacturing companies. It was super difficult at that time because people would not store data, or the data they would store was really bad, and that was really difficult. Of course, as part of a startup life, you just meet as many customers as possible, and you end up realizing that there are other problems really similar, but not just the one that you are tackling at the moment. We ended up in a manufacturing company, in this case it was an automotive company, and they said, well, we understand that problem, but actually our burning problem at the moment is categorizing claims, warranty claims. At that point, it's like, okay, can we develop some IP to tackle that? And we've took that on board. We developed that IP. At that point, I was already head of data science there. And we validated the IP was suitable for its goal. And then, because that customer fell apart in terms of the relationship and the engagement, we need to, well, now we have this new IP, can we apply it to something else? And we found at that point contact centers that they had a lot of inbound requests. And so this was just before chatbots would start appearing.
Right. And so there's a lot of people in call centers, basically.
Exactly. Right. And you wanted to understand what are, in a way, can you apply topic analysis to understand what people are complaining and what's happening in my contact center? So that's where we end up at that time. At that time, I was already the CTO there. And yeah, so that was the journey at Warwick Analytics. Then I moved to Corvate because I always wanted to work in computer vision. And I joined as CTO. The company had an IP around point cloud processing and how to align point clouds. So this is point clouds that are coming from LiDAR sensors from the surveying industry. So I know that this is really technical, but what it means is if you want to create a digital twin or a digital representation of a house, the traditional way to do it nowadays is you go in with a tripod with a LiDAR sensor on top, similar to what you have, the setup that the topographers have outside on those tripods. And then they scan the house, but because each scan is static on in its position, it creates a bubble or a scan, a point cloud.
Right.
And you need to take multiple point clouds of the building. And so when you join them, all of them together in a big puzzle, you end up with a lot of data. And to process that data, normally you do it locally in a desktop application, but our IP was about doing it in the cloud.
Right.
With many CPUs. So instead of taking 2 weeks to process your data, you take it just 2 hours. That was the IP around for Corvate.
Okay, so this is already a solved problem, essentially. We're just solving it in a quicker, more efficient way by using the resources of scalable cloud computing rather than relying on a local desktop, however powerful it might be.
Absolutely.
To do that, yeah, okay.
Of course, then there were some special add-ons coming from the AI side, because of course, then you could add intelligence, I would say. A point cloud that is just a data structure, we could identify where the furniture was, where the walls, the doors, the windows, ceiling, and floor, and so on, automatically, just with deep learning. So that's kind of what I took, me and the team took the product further.
So essentially looking for patterns of points and using those to map against some sort of existing known similar patterns and categorizing it and labeling the data set based on that.
Exactly. So based on geometry and color.
Right.
Or even infrared.
Yeah. Oh, so you can detect things like glass as well. How fun.
Yes. Exactly.
Cool. Okay. So, and again, when you joined Corvate, that was a relatively small team when you joined it, but by the sounds of it, they already had some fairly good IP by the time you joined there. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. The team had already some good IP, had already, I'd say, the first proof of concept working initially in a desktop application, then moved to the cloud. It was good enough as a proof of concept to test the market, but not the standards that we, to a traditional and high standards product in the cloud.
So still work to do, hence the excitement to joining.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah.
Got it. Okay, and how many people were you at that point when you joined?
We were 8 engineers, we kind of 12 people in total, I think.
So it's still a moderately sized team where you, I guess, had a reasonable amount of influence in joining
absolutely,
fairly
early
on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and so Corovate was the company that you became the CEO of then?
That's correct.
Awesome. So let's just quickly go back to that little bit of journey then, because I think that's the exciting bit for most of our listeners to figure out. So what was it that motivated you to become the CEO from being the CTO, which is already, let's face it, an executive role? And so I just want to take you back to sort of the day when you first thought or considered about becoming the CEO. How did the thought come about, and what were your thoughts at the time?
Well, during this journey, I had several, I'd say, entrepreneurial projects. All of them, I tried always to, in a way, become the CEO, but it never happened. I always had this attraction for the challenge. But when I moved to Corovate, there were some internal politics that they were happening, and I was focusing on the tech and just there's so much work to do here. Like, please don't talk to me. I just want to focus on tech, get stuff done, and so we can move forward. But unfortunately, well, things happen, and really, I need to get involved. Initially, it was the board was really happy with what I did and how I orchestrated the change of the team, orchestrated the new engineering processes and the trajectory that the product was taking. And so they proposed me to become the next CEO. At that time, unfortunately, I could not accept, because first there was so much work to do on the tech side. Also, there were some HR political projects ongoing, and I don't want to get involved in kind of those projects. Plus, the company was running out of money, and so we needed to look for another round. And I would say the accumulation of the three different fronts would be too much, I would say. And so I rejected that invite.
Right. So even though it was something you'd wanted to do, there was just these hurdles you looked at and thought, this doesn't look like fun. This doesn't look like a good setup to become the CEO. But so it was the board who approached you to become the CEO then. So there'd been some sort of transition or previous event that had caused the board to come to you then.
Yes. So the previous CEO, he resigned. Of course, there were some disagreements, political disagreements at the board level. At that point, we didn't have a CEO, and then the board approached me. First, I rejected, and of course, I thought, should I have actually taken this this step forward?
So I had doubts about that decision then.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. But I think it was the right right for me, and also right for the company, because I could not fulfill the role correctly.
Yeah, because you still have a lot of tech work to do as well, and all the product work, I should say.
Yes, exactly. I would have to accumulate the CTO role and the CEO. And so at that point, I rejected. The board raised more. Of course, I was involved, but we raised another round, and the board came again and asked me if I wanted to be the CEO. At that point, the HR project has finished, and we had a new runway. It's like, okay, well, I think now is the right time to go and do this. And so I said yes. So that was the beginning of the journey.
And when you did that, were you still responsible for the technology as well? So did you continue to wear the hat of sort of CTO and CPO at the same time?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, but when you first said no, even though you had those tech projects still on your plate, there was, I guess, a more significant or a more focused piece of work that needed to be completed as part of your reason for saying not now.
Yeah, so the product wasn't into a shape that, I would say, the product had to almost be, the restructure of the product needs to be railed in a way that I could step back and help as CEO and help on sales, help on marketing and so on. So I need to rail the team into creating the product how I wanted. And I was in the first round of asking me if I wanted to be the CEO, I would just focus on railing the team.
Right.
Once the team was railed, then the second round, I was like, okay, now I can step back because the team is railed into this path. So and that was how I saw that I could help also as the CEO.
Got it. So you made sure that team had the right trajectory first, so there was Absolutely. Less oversight and leadership needed from you directly into the team in order to make that work. Got it. I think that's a really crucial point for anybody looking at this going forward, because it's something whereby, you know, once you've got a significant change underway, completing that change is quite hard. But once the change is done, the amount of leadership required, I've found in the past when I've done these kinds of things, is you can relatively comfortably step back because there's certain things that become habit. A new way of working becomes Yes. embedded by then, and it doesn't quite need quite so much constant oversight or sort of constant verification that things are going in the right direction.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You put the processes in place and after that you just monitor them. And of course, hold everyone's hand, but the process, everyone knows what's the expectation and the process to follow.
So that must have then led to a fairly key transition point then, which was when you took over the role of the CEO. Was that as straightforward as you expected it to be, or were there certain things that that surprised you and how tough they were?
I think there is never a new role that you take on that it goes super smoothly. Sometimes you don't even know what the role implies. And of course, you know what the CEO should do, but once you are there, actually, do you cover all the points that you should cover every day and do it as you should do? And it's never smoothly, in my opinion. Eventually, you fit into the right shoes and things start moving. Of course, there's also some adjustment for the team that's around you that now sees you not just as a CTO, but also the CEO. And it's understandable that you need to allow people to take their time to adjust.
And were there any sort of particular events or scenarios that you remember quite strongly from those first few days of transition where there was either, I don't know, confusion or maybe struggle? Because I've seen often people, when people make a role transition, like you can change the label, but the expectations and the natural sort of habits of people, they don't change that quickly. That's often sort of fairly challenging. Did you have something like that?
So I remember having conversations with my Scrum Master at that point, and I really wanted to assure everyone that, guys, I'm still the same person. I'm still going to be here with you. I'm going to be focusing on something else, but you now know the processes, and I'm going still to be approachable the same way as I did yesterday. So things are not going to change that much. Kind of reassuring the team that it's going to be okay. And they'll be able to always help everyone because I'm quite an approachable person, I want to believe. And I want them, the team, to feel that they could approach me just because they have a different label on my forehead. It doesn't matter, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I wanted them to feel that. And so I had multiple calls with them, reassuring them that this would happen. So it was really critical for me.
Hey everyone, quick question for you. Have you ever thought about starting a video podcast like this one? I want to introduce you to the team behind my show, Podigy. This podcast has been one of the best marketing tools for my business. And thanks to Podigy, all I have to do is record. They handle everything else. Editing, publishing, and making sure it's optimized perfectly for every platform. They're usually fully booked, but right now, I have a few spots open for new clients. As listeners of this show, you get 10% off launching your own podcast or optimizing your current one. All you need to do is follow the link in the description to book a free one-to-one podcast planning session with Podigy. Cool. And that's sort of maintaining that sort of open door policy, the way you're generally approachable.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. And so when you transitioned into the role then, I mean, what were the things about becoming a CEO that you didn't necessarily predict that ended up being better than you expected, or things that were delightful surprise you didn't see coming?
Right. So, of course, I was involved in, before becoming the CEO, I was involved in sales meetings. I was involved in marketing meetings, but I was never calling the shots. So that challenge of now I'm the one calling the shots, that was interesting. It was challenging. I normally tend to have a collaborative approach. So I try to bring everyone in and try to validate with other people their opinion, because would be silly of me to not hear the head of sales that has more experience of sales than me. And so I want to together, because I would be working with him every day, I would in a way involve him and get his commitment into the final decision. So that was my approach. I did that for the marketing side, for the sales side, but stepping into these new buckets of decisions, styles, HR, marketing, that now you have to lead or give a direction to the heads. Yes, that was in a way challenging, but I really appreciate it. And I had a lot of fun in a way, even though sometimes they were painful.
Yeah, and I presume your new colleagues were helping you through those transitions as well, because often there's sort of almost some groundwork that you need to do to sort of learn the 101 of each of those professions before you can not step in the obvious mistakes. Did you find some of that as well, sort of getting up to speed on the basics of some of the other skills?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So I was reading about pricing models and multiple ways to do pricing models, and also how to do marketing, online marketing, and so on. I never had to. Of course, we had an understanding because we use internet every day, but when you have to really think about the mechanics of it, it's really good to brush that kind of knowledge, but also be humbled to understand, well, is it possible for you to know everything? It's okay to not know and to be curious and go and chase and learn more.
Yeah, and it's one of those things I think most engineers love is learning new things. So I can imagine that was sort of a gratifying from that perspective. You know, I as somebody who has actually never been tempted to take the CEO role. In fact, you know, in my own little business, my wife is my CEO. You know, that's how much I much rather stay in the CTO role. Do you think that there are particular traits or capabilities or experiences that are particularly suited to that CEO role compared to the CTO role?
I think at core of it, it worked really well because it was a really deep tech company. And because I was already the CTO, I knew the market, I knew the technology, I knew the team, I knew the product. I could take that into the CEO. I could speak with customers really, really well. I could tell them why our product would succeed. I could even solve their problems without even contacting customer support, because I knew the in and out of the product. And I think that was the key point for me to become the CEO there. If I'd have to become the CEO of a marketing company, it's like, okay, I'm not a marketing expert, so I don't think it would work. But because it was around a domain that I would be comfortable, and I'd say an expert, so that's where it can work well. Of course, there's some jumps that are still need to happen. There is no doubt about that, and is required from the people out there, from the CTOs out there that want to do that jump. And it's a bumpy road, but it's going to be a lot of fun. That's how I saw it.
So I guess that's one of the key things, is to make things fun. I generally find that you need to have an open mind, approach it with curiosity, and be sort of accommodating on yourself of making mistakes and getting things wrong as you learn, because the fact that you're figuring some things out for the first time. Was that sort of the same thing that you would say is useful for others going to the same role as well?
Absolutely. I told my team every day, guys, I do mistakes every day. The point is, if I do a mistake, I try to fix it. But you only don't do mistakes if you don't do nothing. So just go for it. Don't be shy. And yeah.
Cool. So throw yourself in full force. So once you became the CEO, Andre, how did you sort of set the goals and the direction to go in? How did you figure out how to keep people moving forward at each stage, you know, after that transition from CTO to CEO, where there's obviously a big break in what people were expecting of you and what you expected of yourself?
So that's a good question. So in the beginning, one thing that I found myself was, okay, I have a goal. I run with the team as fast as I can to that goal. But then when I reach the goal, it's like, okay, now I'm demotivated. And it was obvious to me that my communication to the team, to the boards, to customers, was mirroring that mindset. And so I realized after some months that I have to be always with a goal in mind. And so I was setting a goal. That goal could be a new feature, could be a trade show, could be a trip, could be something, could be landing a customer. And when I set that goal, I would work really hard with that in mind and would try to bring the whole team into that goal. They would also be moving and working hard towards a single objective. And that was obvious in the communication, how expressive you were, like the energy and how you could approach every person in the company or even externally. We're talking about customers, boards, engineers, everyone. And once when I reached that goal, I had immediately to think about in a proactive way, what is the next goal? What is going to keep me motivated? And I would find crazy things. Can be a feature, can be a new release, can be a trade show, can be whatever. But it really worked out for me, and I could see the benefits of it for the team. So in a way, I was in massive adrenaline rush all the time, and I was completely pumped in adrenaline. It was great. That was a key point for success for me, absolutely.
And as you were setting those goals, did you sort of have those goals pre-lined up as part of your overall strategy? Or is it a case of each time you hit each one, you sort of have to think, okay, what's the next one that's in line with the overall strategy that I can use as my next motivator?
In a completely ad hoc way. I would not have the goal set up in a timeline. I would, and not a sequence of goals. I would have one for, let's say, 2 weeks, a month. And when I reached that one, I didn't think what I can focus on to keep me motivated, literally like this.
And were some of them around sort of revenue targets and sales goals, or were they always sort of events that would happen?
No, it could be revenue or a new customer or new projects, could be a trade show, could be a release of an infrastructure feature, or even a product feature, like a customer facing product feature. It could be even hiring a new person. It was something that would keep me motivated, and the energy that I could take out of it would keep the team motivated. I think that's the important point, because of course, if I speak really like in a boring way, I'm not going to convince anyone to join in or anyone to tag along and work energetically with me. So I need to be the first one to be motivated. That is the key.
Right. You keep your excitement levels up, then you can infect everybody else with the same levels of excitement.
Absolutely.
Got it. And I presume then, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, did you also manage to celebrate those milestones, those successes when you hit them? So you had that constant level of sort of reinforcement that these are good things to do.
Yes. Some of them with the team. And as part of the Scrum ceremonies, I would share with the team, and we also celebrate. And I was try to bring back to the team like how proud they should be of what they actually delivered and we achieved as a company. And some of them were just personal, and I would share with myself, with friends or my girlfriend, family. But yeah, some of them was just myself. If it was just an internal one, that would not be bothered. But I try to, in a way, because the goal was to keep myself motivated, but keep other ones motivated, try to externalize and project into other people that as much as possible.
Awesome. I guess one of the key things on that is, were there any moments when you sort of thought, oh, this mistake is too big, I'm in over my head, how can I get through this? Did you have those serious doubts in your mind about whether you've made the right decision?
I'd like to share a moment, if I may. where I thought, this is like a really stressful time. So the person that endorsed me to become the CEO, it was a good friend of mine that really trusted me and saw value in me. And this is a director of the board. Unfortunately, this person passed away some years ago. But it was, so the point is that I really valued his opinion. Of course, this is a double-edged sword because you really value his opinion. So when he would come with a request or with a suggestion, at that point, I really have to consider it. We were, of course, running out of money. The runway is getting shorter. And he wanted to extend the runway. And he suggested that we would basically shrink the team so we could extend the runway while we would sell a specific API as a product and not invest in the second product that would be released 2 weeks later.
Right, okay.
Okay. At a trade show. And in my mind that I was in the trenches with the team, it's like, now he's suggesting this person that I really admire and I really have a huge consideration for his opinion, is suggesting me to shrink the team and so and drop completely the product that's going to be ready in 2 weeks. And I don't see the value on this API. So as you can imagine, 2 weeks after working for 6 months in this product, even considering that I would have to get rid of elements of the team, let them go.
People I guess you'd hired probably personally in many cases.
Absolutely. And in a way, in a startup, well, they didn't end up becoming your family, but it's close to that. Like you spend so much time after hours working with them, the stress levels were just over the roof. I remember to be doing yoga that weekend. So I got the news or the suggestion on Wednesday. That weekend it was really, really, really difficult for me. And I remember doing yoga and laying on the mat, and I couldn't even stop thinking about this. I could not sleep. It was horrible. But at some point, and I think this is the key point, I had to, okay, fine. Let's put all the emotions aside about what I think, my ego and what I think doesn't matter. Let's put all of them aside. Let's create almost like a SWOT analysis about the scenario that if I get rid of the half of the team, what would that bring to the company? For example, how flexible are we going to be to move direction further down the line? Is the new product going to succeed, or is the likelihood of succeeding versus what if we release the new product in 2 weeks' time? So I had to consider all of these. I had also to consider HR policies and what would be the impact of this on the runway. And after that, I could say, look, if we take decision A, we just extend runway for a month versus all the risks that we are going to take by doing that and the impact that would have on the morale of the team. We would just only going to save 1 month. And because I was able to explain this so analytically, without any emotions, actually, this person and the whole board really appreciated my approach to the problem. And they then were able to understand why carrying on with the team with the same roadmap as we had before defined was the right decision. That was one of the toughest moments I had as the CEO.
And the hardest bit was therefore taking the emotion out of it and trying to almost ignoring this is somebody you had a huge respect and even indeed friendship with as they're making this suggestion to you.
Yes.
And looking not just at the facts, but primarily at the facts and the implications of those.
Yes. Yes. Precisely. That's a really good way to put it.
And how long did it take you, do you think, before you sort of realized that the answer was to try and put the emotions to one side? I mean, you remember that yoga session when you sort of had that insight, but How much time has passed between when you had the news that that would be a way to go, or the advice about the way to go, and when you decided, okay, this is a way to actually make a decision?
It was maybe around 4 days of just emotional turmoil.
Wow. I can imagine you didn't get much sleep over that time as well.
Yes.
I can...
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
That's quite something. I think, you know, getting good advice is one thing, but then knowing which advice to actually follow and implement is quite another thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I totally agree.
And so like me, I work with a lot of CTOs who have to move beyond technology and into the commercial side of the business. Was there areas of the business that you realized after becoming the CEO that you actually had very little insight of? Was there anything that sort of surprised you in terms of what the business did, how it worked, or areas of it that you just thought, oh, I didn't even see that coming at all?
I would say no, because I was involved with all the, like with all the heads of all the departments. I've kind of knew of the problems. Of course, when you get to the board and when you get to the board at the CEO level, you are even deeper involved, well, as part of the decision making and a part of raising funds and the final decisions. You're not just an observer about all the department's decisions, but actually you are the one calling the shots.
Yeah.
And that was interesting. And there were a lot of decisions, that a lot of tiny details, for example, on pricing models that I wasn't mastering them. But I had to start understanding and mastering and taking those shots. Of course, I had several advisors at the board level and that were coaching me. And it's really important to, in a way, being humble and inviting other people to contribute and to help you to take a better decision. I don't think when we are inviting other people to come and contribute, and you completely put your ego aside, normally people come and help you. And even if you completely trash your way of thinking, as long as they can justify that it's better, at least for me, I want to believe that we can end up in a better scenario than with me on my own. So that, at least that's how I see the world.
And so you've mentioned several times about the board, and we know from what you said before that you were good friends with at least one of the board members before you even considered making the transition. How well did you know the rest of the board before you made the transition to CEO? Or was that a set of relationships you'd started building up early on in your tenure at the company?
So I didn't know anyone when I joined the company. This director, he joined as director when I was already the CTO. I didn't know him, but we became good friends when we were working together. And I think it was due to the mutual respect that we had, working crazy hours. I remember after a long day of work, taking the team climbing for just a social event after work, I was on the bus, on the phone to this director without having any dinner. It was 11 o'clock at night. I was in front of my door without going in, and literally, we were just discussing and taking decisions. Quite a heated conversation, but with lots of respect for each other.
Right.
And the respect and the friendship came through all these tough moments that we went together, almost like this bonding experience that we went through. And so I think because he would see my hard work going through all these multiple stages and the decisions that were right at those several moments, he started recognizing the value and how I could contribute to the company.
Excellent. So that was one of the board members. Did you know the rest of them particularly well before you stepped into the CEO role, or was that something that you developed those relationships?
Those relationships, definitely.
Okay, right. That's really good to know, because I think there are some CEOs or some people who want to be a CEO who would think that might be an important prerequisite before going into the role.
So, I don't think it's of course it helps. Networking always helps. but also the way people can communicate, I think is really important. So one way, or one thing that I believe it contributed massively for to become the CEO was to be able to communicate really technical in, sorry, this expression, but I think it's a really, like these geeky terms of deep learning, AI, cloud computing, that you'd speak with engineers in the team, but I converted these terms using analogies and metaphors, and I was able to communicate that to the boards where the average age there was around 60 or 65. I had a barrister, I had an M&A lawyer, a professor. So it's so varied, but I had to be able to communicate these decisions that I was making based on these technology needs. But I had to convert that techie language into common sense in a way.
Right. So something that almost anybody could understand, basically.
Absolutely. And so I had to, I believe that the way I communicated created trust in these people that would not understand tech. And so they would trust this person that at least can communicate and explain to them what is happening on the tech department.
Yeah. And I always say that trust is a really fundamental part of pretty much any leadership role. Would you say that trust that you earned from the board was a key part of your success as a CEO then?
Absolutely. And yeah. Also delivering things on time and explaining things, it always helps.
Yeah, the other sort of regular parts of the job are just getting it done. Yeah. Okay, that's great. Cool. I mean, I think in terms of boiling this down into a sort of a playbook for other people to be able to follow, then I've written a few notes, but I really appreciate, Andre, if you can help me as I go through and try and boil down all that great advice into a bit of a playbook. So in terms of sort of the prerequisites, the things you need to do before getting to that point of becoming the CEO, then I wrote down that there was sort of getting the right conditions before you set the transition to make sure that you've got the right situation where you've actually set up for success, as that was one of the first things to do. I also then had written down that that you need to be quite good at using your analogies and metaphors for communication to be able to really clearly communicate between tech and non-tech, which most CTOs will have developed during their time in the executive team, but an important prerequisite nonetheless.
Yes, I think that is a really important one. And if I may, another one that is critical, and I see many CTOs struggling with, is just stepping beyond tech and understanding the business. At the end of the day, how I see the world is, tech is just a means to an end. What actually matters is the business needs, the product, the customers, and why they are buying this product. If you really understand all of that, then the tech is just an enabler. So unless we are talking about a product that is aimed to developers, we almost can remove the tech and just think about business. So being focused on the business side of the company, I think is a really important point to become the CEO.
Excellent. Yeah, and I think that's critically important and ties very neatly into one of the other things I'd written down, which was to be able to be, to before the transition, is to look around the business and start learning the areas of the business that you don't know about. Because you mentioned that you were pretty familiar with most areas of the business before making that transition. I think that must have been fairly crucial to your success.
Absolutely. Yes.
Cool. And then I think one of the other things you said is to sort of separate out the CEO and the CTO role, in that you made sure that the big changes and transitions that were needed from the CTO you'd done beforehand. I think generalizing that is the case of making sure that you can focus time and effort on the CEO role rather than trying to wear two hats long term, because I think that most people who transition from CTO to CEO are probably going to end up wearing both hats at least for a time, even if not long term.
Yes, it's sometimes a bit difficult to let go. It went in the beginning, I agreed, it might have been the situation. But at some point, you hired your team is because you trust them. So you let them do the job that you hired them for.
Cool. And then the other things I had written down were knowing the company domain, you know, inside and out, even if you're not an expert in all areas and all aspects of it, but having a familiarity with the company domain is fairly crucial to still have the passion in the role of the CEO.
Absolutely. And your energy is going to really sweat into your conversations, and the knowledge is going to almost be communicated to the other sides, potentially customers. So that's a really important one.
Excellent. And then the last two were sort of points for once you're in the role, almost contradicting each other, but not quite. One is on the area of coaching. So invite others to help you. I think that keyword you used of invite was a really crucial one, because it also implies a mindset that you have about being ready to learn and learn new things.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then closely related to that one was take good advice, but choose what to implement with a discerning eye. I think I was sort of brought home by that wonderful story of you on the yoga mat trying to figure out how to make sense of this advice you had from somebody you had great respect for.
Yes, sometimes it's a really difficult call, but at the end of the day, you were hired to be in that position, and you are there to literally make the tough calls. So you are the person, for good or for bad, to take those decisions. So, and unfortunately, that's the scenario.
Brilliant. I think that's a great playbook for somebody beginning to get into there. I mean, I would ask if there's anything we missed out. There's probably absolutely loads we've missed out. But I'd say if you're going to give somebody who's thinking about this transition, who's currently in the chief technology officer role and is considering whether they've been invited or not to be the CEO of either that company or a different company, what would you say is the single most important aspect for them to either think about or do?
Focus on the business. Focus on the business, forget about tech. And just explore all the aspects of the business as much as possible.
Cool.
With curiosity, I'd say.
With curiosity, yes. Yeah. I think as one of the key traits, I think, of almost any role in the executive team, you need to have curiosity to go digging into things when you feel like it's necessary.
Yes, absolutely.
Andre, it's been wonderful to speak to you today. How can people get hold of you if they want to get in touch with you and talk to you further?
On LinkedIn. I believe we are going to share...
we'll put the link in the show notes, but that's the best way to get in touch with you. Brilliant.
Yeah,
thank you. Any final words for the listeners, Andre?
My advice is don't be afraid of jumping into the CEO role. It's a lot of a ride, but it's a lot of fun.
And I think that's the key thing. Having fun in almost every situation in a role always makes things a lot easier to do.
Absolutely.
Andre, thanks very much. And if you're listening to this, continue to lead with impact, and we'll see you in the next episode. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Adam.
Thank you very much for listening all the way through to the end. Just before you go, I'd like to ask you for one thing in return for putting together all these episodes of the CTO Playbook podcast for you. Please leave a review. Wherever you're listening, whether that is Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whichever platform you're on, leaving a quick review will help more CTOs find the podcast and enable me to create more great episodes. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode of the CTO Playbook.